The Riddle of the Sands by Erskine Childers, dramatised by Roderick Graham, with Laurence Kennedy as Carruthers and Charles Simpson as Davis. The Riddle of the Sands.
I was finding London in the September of 1903 a dull place. All of my friends were out of town, shooting in Scotland or on the Riviera, and I was at a loose end, a very loose end indeed. I had been led for a few evenings into the shady haunts of Soho, and had even ventured as far east as the Ratcliffe Highway, where I had sat next to a portly female who at frequent intervals refreshed herself and her infant from a bottle of tepid stout. Therefore, I now confine myself to dining at my club, or rather, I should say, at a club which, since mine was being painted and refreshed during the summer, acted as my host. In truth, it was a sorry place and hardly worth dressing for. I could not know that my boredom and indolence was soon to be replaced by the greatest adventure of my life.
More boiled cod, sir?
Hawkins? I think not. Carruthers?
Nor for me.
Very good.
Could you bring us the Havanas and a decanter of brandy in the smoking room?
Certainly, sir.
I know it's bad form to speak ill of one's hosts, but this is a truly awful club.
I'm surprised to find you here, Carruthers. I thought you'd be out of town.
Well, didn't much care for the invitations I got. Didn't get the invitations I would have cared for. So the Foreign Office gets my undivided attention for a change.
What on earth do you find to do all day?
Oh, right boring précis from the lesser consulate.
Ah,
I smoke cigarettes, mainly. Shall we go through to the smoking room?
So, things are a bit bleak socially. No shooting, no yachting parties?
As a matter of fact, something has turned up. Do you remember a chap called Davis when we were up at Oxford? On our staircase. Red Law. Quiet sort.
I just remember him. A bit scruffy. Not yes. In our set. Messed about with boats a lot, I recall.
That's the chap. Yeah. I saw a bit of him when I came down, but we drifted apart.
Your brandy and cigars,
sir. Ah, thank you. Cut us a pair of Romeos, if you will. I'll cope with the brandy.
Very good, sir.
Well, he wrote to me yesterday, invited me to a cruise in the Baltic.
The Baltic? And in September? Can't say I'd be too keen. Anyway, I don't know a soul in the Baltic.
I thought the Admiralty had friends everywhere.
We do draw the line somewhere, you know. And the Baltic's a bit odd.
So is Davis's letter. Have a look.
Can't say the notepaper's too impressive. I think this is some kind of oil. Dear Carruthers, I dare say you'll be surprised at hearing from me, as it's ages since we met.
So I merely write on the off chance to ask if you would care to come out here and join me in a little yachting, and I hope duck shooting. My pals have had to leave me, and I'm badly in want of another, as I don't want to lay up yet for a bit. If you can come, send me a wire to the post office here at Flensburg. Bring your gun and lots of number fours. Well, and would you mind getting mine out of Lancaster's and bringing it? Bring some oilskins, too. Better get the 11-shilling sort of jacket and trousers, not the yachting sort. I know you speak German like a native, and that will be a great help. Forgive this hail of directions, but anyway, I hope you and the FO flourish. Goodbye. Yours ever, Arthur H. Davis. P.S. Would you mind bringing a pound of Raven mixture, a prismatic compass, and a number three Rippingill stove.
Quite a shopping list. Are you going?
I've got some leave due. So I saw my boss this morning. You remember him?
Yes.
Well, I cleared it with him. It all sounds a bit of a lark. So why not?
Why no yachting trousers? And what on earth is a Rippingill stone?
Very large and heavy indeed. I got all his stuff at the stores today. There was a queue. But I'm off tomorrow night. More brandy. By 8:30, I had shaken off the dust of London from my feet. And at 10:30, I was, thanks to a prompt railway train, pacing the deck of the Flushing steamer, adrift on this fatuous holiday in the far Baltic. An air from the west, cooled by a midday thunderstorm, followed the steamer as she slid through the calm channels of the Thames estuary, past the cordon of scintillating lightships that watch over the sea roads to the imperial city like a sleeping army, and slipped out into the dark spaces of the North Sea. An irresistible sense of peace and detachment, combined with that delicious physical awakening that pulses through the nerve-sick townsman when city airs and bad routine are left behind him, combined to provide me with a solid background of resignation. If the weather held up, I might pass a not intolerable fortnight with Davis. I settled this program and then turned in. From Flushing eastward to Hamburg, and then northward to Flensburg. I shall cut short the next day's sultry story, past dike and windmill and still canals, onto blazing stubbles and roaring towns. At the last, after dusk, through a quiet level region where the train pottered from one lazy little station to another. And at 10 o'clock, I found myself, stiff and stuffy, on the platform at Flensburg, exchanging greetings with Davis.
Davis! I say, Davis!
Carruthers, my dear chap! It's awfully good of you to come.
Not at all. It was very good of you to ask me.
I'm afraid I'm not fit to be seen, but, well, this time of night it doesn't matter. I've been painting hard all day, just got it finished. I say, you've got a good deal of stuff.
You gave me a good many commissions.
Oh, I didn't mean those things. Oh, thanks for bringing them, by the way. No, it's that portmanteau. You couldn't do with just the Gladstone, I suppose, could you?
Well, I...
You see, the dinghy, and then there's the hatchway. Oh, anyhow, let's try. I'll take this, then.
Aren't your crew here?
Crew? Well, perhaps I should have told you. I never have any paid hands. It's quite a small boat, you know. I do hope you didn't expect luxury. Now, come on, let's go.
Isn't it rather late to go aboard? I think I'd rather sleep at an hotel tonight.
Of course, you can do that if you like. Hardly seems worthwhile to cart all this stuff to an hotel and back to the boat tomorrow.
But surely there are porters.
Not at this time of night. But don't worry, the Dulcie's quite comfortable and you're tired. You're sure to sleep well. Anyway, I shall have to go aboard. I never sleep on shore.
Heavily loaded, we stumbled over wet and treacherous railway lines and came on a stairway whose weedy steps disappeared below into the gloom of the dock. Gingerly, I descended, holding as a guide a sodden painter, which ended in a very small boat, conscious that I was collecting slime on cuffs and trousers. Having once sat down with one foot in the water, I climbed wretchedly into the dinghy and waited events.
Now, make fast that ring down there. In off will do. Right. Here comes your portmanteau. Dead amidships. Right?
Got it.
Does she fit?
Yes, but it's a bit
hassle. Now for the rest.
Scratching at the greasy wall to keep the dinghy close to it, I received in succession our stores and stowed the cargo as best I could while the dinghy sank lower and lower in the water and its precarious superstructure grew higher and higher.
Catch!
Oh,
be careful of that.
This is blood.
Yes, I know. It's meat. Right. She's rather deep. I think we'll manage, sir. Now, you sit right aft, and I'll row. Right. I'm lying a little way down the fjord, you see. Hate to be too near a town. There's a carpenter handy, too. For the...
There she is. We'll be alongside in a jiffy. Get our gear unloaded.
In a moment, he rowed us out to his boat, jumped on deck, tied the painter, and was round at my end.
Hold her steady.
It was a laborious task. But when the stack was transferred to the deck, I followed it, tripping over the flabby meat parcel, which was already showing ghastly signs of disintegration.
Try not to stand up, old man.
What was that? Hazily, there floated through my mind my last embarkation on a yacht. My faultless attire, the trim gig, the obsequious sailors, the accommodation ladder flashing with varnish and brass in the August sun, the orderly, snowy decks and basket chairs under the awning aft. What a contrast with this sordid midnight scramble over damp meat and littered packing cases. The bitterest touch of all was a growing sense of inferiority and ignorance, which I had never before been allowed to feel in my experience of yachts.
Welcome aboard the Dulcibella. I'll just show you around below first. And then we'll stow things away and get to bed.
Ow! Oh, mind your head. I'll light a candle and you can look around. Righto. Hold on a second. There we are. See? Plenty of room to sit upright. Some people make such a fuss about headroom, but I never bother much about it.
My shins again.
Aye, that's the centre plate case. The Dulcie's a flat-bottomed boat, drawing very little water without the centre plate, so that's why there's so little headroom. For deep water, you can lower the plate, so in one way or another, you can go practically anywhere. You sit there, I'll boil some water and we'll have some grog.
My eyes were used to the light now, and I took in the rest of my surroundings. Two long cushion-covered seats flanked the cabin, bounded at the aft end by cupboards, one of which was cut low to form a sideboard, with glasses hung in a rack above it. The deck overhead was very low at each side, but rose shoulder-high for a space in the middle, where a coach-house roof with a skylight gave additional cabin space. Just outside the door was a fold-up washstand. On either wall were long net racks holding a medley of flags, charts, caps, cigar boxes, hanks of yarn and such like. Across the forward bulkhead was a bookshelf crammed to overflowing with volumes of all sizes, mainly on yachting and naval warfare, some upside down, some coverless. Below this was a pipe rack, an aneroid, and a clock with a hearty tick. All the woodwork was painted white, and, to a less jaundiced eye than mine, the interior might have had a look of enticing snugness.
I'm afraid your portmanteau's too big to go down the skylight, so I've started unpacking on the deck. You can chuck your things down as you want them.
I say, Davis...
By the way, I doubt if there's going to be room for them all. I don't suppose you could...
No, I couldn't.
No, I rather thought not. Well, if you can come up on deck...
If you go out... I shall be able to get out too.
All right.
I pushed past, mounted the ladder, and in the expiring moonlight groped in my belongings, sorting some into the skylight with the same feeling that nothing much mattered now.
There she goes!
Then I sat down on my white elephant and shivered, for the chill of autumn was in the air. How it came about, I do not know. Whether it was one of those instants of clear vision in which our separate selves are seen divided, whether it was the impalpable air of mystery that pervaded the whole enterprise. Whatever it was, in a flash my mood changed, and I saw my silly egoism in contrast with his simple, generous nature. The crown of martyrdom disappeared, and there was left... a fashionable and disheveled young man sitting in the dew and the dark on a ridiculous portmanteau.
Grog's ready.
I found, to my astonishment, that all trace of litter had miraculously vanished and a cozy neatness reigned. Glasses and lemons were on the table and the fragrant smell of punch had deadened all previous odours.
Mmm. There's your new stove, you see. I've chucked the old one overboard. I rather like chucking things overboard.
It all looks, well, very comfortable.
Yeah, it is comfortable, isn't it? Yeah. Shall we have our grog in bed? The bunks are through here.
Ah!
Mind your head.
Where if I stow some stuff on this shelf?
It's not a shelf, that's your bunk.
Oh. There's a blanket. It seems to be a bit damp.
Well, it's the dew, I expect. I did a lot of caulking yesterday. Must have missed that bit. Well, I'll mop it up for you.
Oh, you've hurt your hand.
The bandage? Oh, that would... No, it's nothing. Just a sprain. That reminds me, the new compass were jolly useful.
What do you mean?
Oh?
What reminded you about the new compass?
I say, try this grog. It's jolly good.
I dozed but fitfully before I reached the stage of torpor with which such slumber merges. That was finally broken by the descent through the skylight of a torrent of water. I started up, bumped my head hard against the decks, and blinked leaden-eyed upwards.
Sorry, I'm scrubbing decks. Come up and bathe. Slept well?
Fairly well.
I stumbled up the ladder, dived overboard, and buried bad dreams, stiffness, frowsiness, and tormented nerves in the loveliest fjord of the lovely Baltic. A short and furious swim, and I was back again, searching for a means of ascent up the smooth black side, which, low as it was slippery and unsympathetic.
Here you are. Grab hold of this rope.
Got it.
Now, hand over hand. Mind the paint, it's fresh.
It was a magnificent swim. I feel a new man.
Well, you've got paint all over your knees and elbows.
It's all right, I don't mind.
I think you just finished painting those bits.
Oh.
Now, you get some togs on while I finish breakfast.
Bacon smells wonderful.
As I dressed in white flannels and blazer, I was able to take in my surroundings hitherto hidden by darkness. The Dulcibella seemed very small. In fact, she was 7 tons, some 30 feet by 9, suitable for weekends in the Solent. But that she should have come from Dover to the Baltic suggested a world of physical endeavor of which I had never dreamed. In the distant past, she had been a lifeboat, built with immense strength of 2 diagonal skins of teak, and the addition of deck, saloon, and extra spars gave her, in the matter of looks, all the hybrid's failings. Many signs of recent refitting, a new rope or two, and a diminutive mizzen mast, had given her the appearance of a respectable woman of the working classes trying to dress above her station and soon likely to give it up.
Breakfast ready.
Wonderful. Smell's been torturing me.
My, you do look smart. Douse is not used to yachting rig.
First thing that came to hand.
Well, I expect you'll sort it all out in time. There now. Fresh bread, milk, bacon, fried eggs. Have some.
Mmm. Delicious.
Hmm. Rare luxury.
Eggs?
Rare? One has to go ashore for them. I loathe going ashore. Tea?
Thank you. You must have had some exciting adventures on your cruise from England. I wish you'd tell me.
Well, there's a wind now. We mustn't waste it. I'll tell you later. You finish that while I start washing up, then we can get on the way.
Righto.
Thenceforward, events moved with bewildering rapidity. Davis was everywhere, darting swiftly to and fro between tiller and jib sheets, while the Dulcibella bowed a lingering farewell to the shore and headed for the open fjord. I became a new and unexpected obstacle in his round of activity, for my knowledge of a yacht was of that floating and inaccurate kind which is useless in practice.
I say, Carruthers, are you sure you're quite comfortable?
Well, I...
Hang on to the tiller for a jiff.
But, Davis, I've never...
No, here you go. Cushions. Well, you're still tired.
But I say, can't I be of any use?
Do you mind having a look at that chart? You see Flensburg?
Yeah?
We're just here.
Got it.
Which side of that buoy do we pass?
Never mind.
I'm pretty sure it's all deep water around here.
In a minute or so, we were passing the buoy in question on the wrong side, I was pretty certain. For weeds and sand came suddenly into view below us with uncomfortable distinctness.
There's never any sea here, and the plate's not down. The best of these Schleswig waters is that a boat of this size can go almost anywhere.
There's no navigation required.
Aren't we aground?
Well, she'll blow over. Come on, Dorsey.
There, you see?
Now, we're going to have to jibe. You take the helm, will you? I'll mind the main sheet.
Oh,
ready? Now, helm, hard over. Mind your head.
I had rude notions of steering, but jibing is a delicate operation. And no yachtsman will be surprised to hear that the boom saw its opportunity and swung over with a mighty crash. The mainsheet entangled around me and the tiller.
Ah! Jibed all standing. She brought her out of the wind. See, look at the bird G. It's just that you're not used to her yet. She's very quick on the helm.
I think she's catching the wind now. Where am I to steer?
Well, never mind. I'll take her now.
I'm an utter duffer of sailing.
Pray, there's always been a crew.
Crew? Well, the whole fun of the thing is to do everything oneself.
Well, I felt in the way all the more.
I'm awfully sorry. It's just the other way. You may be all the use in the world. Let's have lunch.
A vision of iced drinks, tempting salads, white napery, and an attentive steward mocked me with past recollections.
You'll find bottled beer under the floor in the bilge and the tongue in the locker.
Aye.
I opened a locker, reached down and grasped a sticky body, which turned out to be a pot of varnish. I tried the other one and a medley of damp tins of various sizes showed in the gloom, exuding a mouldy odour. Faded legends spoke of soups, curries, beefs, potted meats, and other hidden delicacies. I picked out the tongue, re-imprisoned the odour, and explored for beer among the slimy ballast in the bilge.
How are you getting on? The tin opener's hanging up on the bulkhead, and the plates and knives are in the cupboard.
The plates and knives met me halfway, the cupboard being on the weather side. Its contents slid affectionately into my bosom and overflowed with a clatter and a jingle onto the floor.
That often happens. Never mind. There are no breakables. I'm coming down to help.
I think I'll come on deck. Why in the world we couldn't go ashore and save this infernal pandemonium of a picnic? Where's the yacht going to, meantime? I'm covered in varnish and mud. My trousers are ruined.
You'd always chuck them overboard.
There goes the beer.
Well, never mind. It'll drain into the bilge. Look, you go on deck and keep her as she's going. I'll finish getting ready, all right?
Soon, I forgot petty squalors and enjoyed things. The coy tremble of the tiller and, with somewhat chastened rapture, the lunch which Davis brought up to me. Later, after we had anchored, dined on steaks with slight traces of yesterday's newspaper and washed up, Davis produced a selection of German, Dutch and Belgian cigars. When did you leave England exactly?
August 6th. We made a good run to Ostend.
Ostend in August can be fun.
Filthy hole. And anyway,
you hate going ashore.
Exactly.
So then you came directly here?
Up the Dutch coast, yeah. Very dull. Nearly always in sight of land.
Could I see your log?
Oh, you find it very dull reading. If you could read it at all. Just short notes about winds and bearings. Well, I sailed up to the first of the German islands. Look at the chart there. It's called Borkum.
I got it. What's all this stuff marked here?
Well, those are sands. These are the channels, you see. They're very badly charted, so it's splendid sailing ground.
Wasn't this all a bit dangerous?
Well, not with the Dulcibella. She's perfect for this sort of work. And she doesn't really look that bad either. Anyway, I don't go in for looks.
Didn't you ever take a pilot?
But the whole point of the thing... Well, I did take one once, later on.
And?
He ran me aground. But I wonder what the weather's doing.
What's it look like?
It looks like rain. Perhaps we'd better turn in.
I slept practically the whole afternoon. Tell me more about your trip. It's a longish haul to here, though.
About 70 miles direct?
Direct? Then you put in somewhere.
Well, I stopped once, anchored for the night. The whole place is pretty deserted. Let's go through to bed, huh?
Did you
never see another yacht?
Another yacht? Well, yes, I did see another yacht. Just the one. Yes, just the one. Good night, Carruthers.
Good night, Davis. I'll just see my cigar out, if you don't mind.
I was intrigued by this conversation, and feeling like a thief, I took down the log of the Dulcibella. As he had said, it was pretty dull stuff, full of kedging off and boom-dodging. Until September the 9th, where it stopped abruptly, leapt over 3 days, and restarted on September the 11th. Quite simply, the relevant page had been torn out and the edges picked clean. But dissimulation was not Davis's strong point, and a child could have seen that a leaf was missing. I was on the point of calling to Davis and chaffing him with a breach of maritime law, but I checked myself and returned the book to the shelf and made my way to my bunk. Davis was sleeping like a child, but I did not find Morpheus for some hours.
Ahoy! The Dulcibella! Ahoy!
Turtles!
Ah, well met, Captain! Where are you bound this time, huh?
Well, where have you come from? Have some coffee.
I took some apples to Capellen, and now I sail to Kiel and then Hamburg. But, you're no longer alone.
Oh, I quite forgot. This is meine Freund, Herr Carruthers. Carruthers, this is Schiffer Bartels, captain of the galliot Johannes.
How do you do, Captain?
Herr Carruthers.
Well, I'll get some coffee.
Yeah. And the schnapps, huh? It's good that the captain is no longer alone. He's a fine young man, but he is too brave, too reckless. It will be good for him to have a friend.
Where was it you met?
In an ugly place and in ugly weather. I came just in time.
Really?
But he has not told you.
What are you two talking about?
I was asking how you met.
Oh, he helped me out of a bit of a mess in the North Sea.
Oh, it was nothing. But I see you've replaced the mizzenmast.
Yeah.
The rudder was nothing much, but it was well that it held to Flensburg. You could have died. She is strong and good, your little ship, and heaven she had need to be.
Coffee.
Yeah, danke.
Davis plied his friend with coffee and schnapps and kept up the talk gallantly. Bartels ended with an invitation to join him at Kiel, and with suave farewells, disappeared into the fog.
Let's go below.
What did he mean? You could have died.
Well, it's been fearfully on my mind. Perhaps you'll be able to help me, but it's for you to decide.
It began near Norderney.
How did you guess that?
I feel a bit of a cad, but I must confess I read your log.
Oh.
You're a bad hand at duplicity.
Go on. Well, I was anchored off Norderney. That's the easternmost of the islands. There's a town there where the Germans go sea bathing in the summer. When I saw this yacht, she was called the Medusa, about 50, 60 tons, very smart, varnished all over and flying the German ensign. The locals had told me the owner was a keen shot, so one evening after dinner I sculled over in the dinghy, hailed a sailor, said who I was, and waited on deck. Then a steward came and showed me down to the saloon. It was horribly gorgeous. All mahogany and plush.
Quite awful.
Exactly. A crystal and silver on the table, wine and fruit. The owner, Herr Dolman, was at his coffee.
Slowly. What was this Dolman like?
Oh, tall, thin chap. Evening dress, about 50. Grey hair. Huge eyebrows. There was something about him, I don't know. He spoke English, but with a heavy accent.